Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I am a working man, I get things done, work for the Holy Ghost.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Yep.
Sorry, I didn't have a follow-up there. I was just excited for the opening.
That was a home run.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, very effective, Mike. Good job. It's a way to bring it on in. Hey, that set the right level for the show. The whole show is going to go that way. So, like, if you got other stuff to do, like you want to clean out the lint out your laundry, and I don't mean just like in the front tray. I mean, do you know it's like a real bad fire hazard with the lint that goes out from your dryer out to the outside?
Yeah, I bought one of those kits a couple years ago.
To, like, clean it out or to replace it?
Yeah, you just keep plugging it in, you hook up your drill, and it keep going longer and longer. It's really fun.
Hey, man, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
What, does that go through the flexible tubing already?
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Little fiberglass, like 3-foot sections, and you just keep screwing them together, and you go all the way out. I have a pretty long tube, too. And, yeah.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I did my mother-in-law's. Brownie points.
I mean, are you for hire? Dan for hire?
I did notice that people do get paid quite well for that. And I kind of thought, man, I should put a little website out there and do that. But
Dan the dryer man. So the reason I even thought of that, though, was like 2 years ago, I was walking around and I kept smelling this burning smell.
Ooh.
And I thought that we have a gas dryer, and I thought, oh man, it's just inefficient. And then, like, eventually we pulled the dryer out and I looked back there and, like, no, it had started a series of mini fires.
Yeah,
like,
houses burned down with that. I mean,
yeah.
It's legit.
Yeah, I mean, and, like, there's nothing that feels worse than the weight of knowing that you casually walked past mini fires while you were drying your clothes and thought, I feel like it's fine.
It's just my children.
So I'd like to say I'm more diligent with that, but this drill thing kind of, that makes sense to me.
Oh man, what else can kill you at your place?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Fellas, what's the closest you've come to death?
Ooh. That's a good question.
I mean, I came close to killing our family once by drilling a hole into the gas line. That was a bad idea.
No, that I would say that's pretty close to death.
Yeah,
I feel
yeah.
That'd take some effort, Dan.
I thought it was the water line.
Going right, and thought I gotta keep at it.
It was a soft copper tube. I thought this is obviously for the ice maker, but it was the gas line.
What's the bummer?
I thought, well, it sounds like it's going, but it sure smells like gas.
You know, to your credit, Dan, I don't think you're allowed to run gas in copper tubing. So, like, somebody has
well, exactly.
A,
that was
a
I,
poor job.
That's what I, it was in a smaller town, and they probably don't have the codes there they have here. Because that was my logic. I thought, well, you can't put gas in this, so obviously it's water.
Yeah, around here we wink and smile at death.
Yeah. So I may have ran out of the house and told my wife to grab our child, which was at that point in a car seat, and say, get her out of the house now. We're going to blow up. And
do you know how crazy you probably sounded? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's really no evidence of your freak out going on. Like, and you're out there and be like, get everybody.
No, she saw
stuff.
Me with a tool in my hand. She said, yeah, you're probably right.
No bad things are about to happen.
Yeah. Put down the tool.
Hey,
we hire people for tools.
That is the problem, I guess, with if you're a rational thinker, someone says something outrageous, and like you're the person that's supposed to bring calm to a situation. And so if someone comes out and says, hey man, we gotta get out of here, we're gonna blow up, my first reaction probably isn't to leave, it's to like, maybe you're overreacting, maybe we're not gonna blow up. But like, that's the kind of thing that gets a guy blown up, is that
yeah, exactly.
Type of thing.
No doubt. Why don't you explain the situation to me, and I will tell you whether it's dire or not. That's exactly what I would think.
So I'm exactly that guy, yeah. I'll sit there and go, now, when you say duck, could you give me some, you know, extra information? You know, and then it hits me in the head. So, yeah.
Oh, that's what you were getting at. I'm with you now.
Now I get it now. Thank you.
All right, you're listening.
What did you say?
You're listening to Live from the Path. Yeah. Good. Watch out for fire in your place. So, here's what I got on the show tonight. I think we got lots of advice. I think the world needs advice, and I don't think we need to spend a bunch of time on it, but I caught the first half an hour of the presidential debate, and I was wondering to myself, who's the pro-marijuana candidate? Because the country's going to need something. Like, if they legalize it, whoever comes through to, like, deal with the outcome of these two jokers taking the place over. And I've never thought, hey, legal marijuana is the answer. But it occurred to me, watching the first half an hour of the debate. And so, you know, just something to think about, I suppose, when you cast your ballot.
That's the thing is I listened to it when I was driving in, and I thought, I feel like the Lord's out getting coffee during this thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was not one solid, moral-based... It was a bunch of peacocking, you know what I'm saying? Like, two people up there just a strutting around, and no one's really getting anything done. They're just kind of strutting around.
It was like two people trying not to fail.
Yeah.
But yet that made them both kind of fail. They just looked like really? You guys want to... You're vying for my vote? Or you just want me to not vote for, you know, the other guy? I mean... Yeah, it was boring. It was terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And I get into this stuff.
I would agree. I was pretty excited for it. Like, I'm not really excited about either candidate here, but like, I really like watching debates. I like listening to people talk about ideas and stuff. And I was about 25 minutes in and I thought, I'm going to turn this off. It's going to poison the children. I'm not even all that interested in it. When I was driving in, to do some prep work for the show, I kind of bounced back between a couple different news programs that were carrying the debate. And like, they were on opposite sides of the political spectrum as to what the show was, but that were showing clips and stuff. And like, I mean, they were counting successes in seconds. Like, he's really having a good 8-10 seconds right here. I'm like, yeah, I would say for the last 15 seconds, she really owned the table. Like, I mean, they were counting victories in very, very micro means.
Yeah, there was no moment.
Yeah.
There was one moment for me toward the end when he was like rambling on and on, and I actually kind of quit listening. I thought, what's he talking about again? And she started smiling, and I thought, oh, he just gave himself too much rope. And he's kind of hung himself on that. But still, it wasn't like... you know, a grand slam for either one.
Right.
It was just like, yeah.
You're right, though. It was completely in the negative, though. It was like, who was willing to jump far enough off the cliff so that everyone could laugh at it?
Yeah.
It wasn't where, like, someone gave you a compelling vision for the country and you were like, yes, I'm on board.
The compelling right. vision for the country. Here's the reason I actually liked the debate is like, I have no clue what's going to come out of that man's mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he accused a 400-pound hacker
of
breaking through the DNC. And I thought, I had no idea he was going to say that. Like, we're on national television here's the thing. This is what I was considering a little bit when I was driving in. Was like, is this breeding, especially my generation? I've been through a couple presidential debates, you know, about a couple presidential seasons, right? But like, do I not hold the honor of that office that my parents used to hold for it? Did my parents not hold what their grandparents used to hold for it, right? Did that office mean something completely different, say 60 years ago, than I even can fathom of taking it in because of this buffoonery, right? Because of what the election cycles have become and the ad campaigns and all that squashed together. To me, just maybe it's just because of my age, I almost just kind of patently ignore it.
It's always been that way, though. The politicians have always been that way. I mean, you know, it's just a different era, but you know, they just used different tricks back in the day before they had television. And I mean, I don't know if it's changed, but the public, I think, maybe doesn't give it the honor that they used to have.
I think maybe that's what Mike's getting at, is that, like, we just, there's just no gravity to it anymore. And that's on the public side in reaction to some of that stuff, where otherwise, like, the office was kind of above the fray, even if the people weren't.
That probably started with Clinton, I think. Bill Clinton, in his campaign, and it worked well for him, wanted to be like a commoner. You know, I'd grab my saxophone and get on, like, the Tonight Show and start playing, and everybody's like, oh, man, I could sit down and hang out with him. And nobody before that had done that. It was more like, you know, I want to lead you, I want to be your president. And he, like, put a whole different tone on it.
Yeah, that's true. Even, like, a guy like Kennedy wasn't a guy where... I mean, he's not a commoner. He's just not.
Right. Yeah, he's unapproachable so much. I mean, he's the president, you know.
And no one wanted to hang out with Nixon. Yeah. No one wanted Nixon. Ford shouldn't have been there. I would maybe just start with
that. I'd have to think about that to see if I think that's true or not. But, like, sometimes I think I'd want an everyday Joe running that thing. But the truth of the matter is, like, everyday Joe handles
everyday
Joe stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, sometimes I think that, like, especially when I think about kings or monarchs, you know, or people that are running countries, I think, you know, I have to handle my bit of society, and you handle the greater thing because you're not handling your bit of society because you're handling the greater thing, right? Things that I could never delve into, like the ins and outs of our foreign policy. I don't get the details, the information, the scope of it, the history of it, none of it, right? Like, I'm just dealing with how do I get to work and get back home and take care of my family. And so, in some regards, do I want somebody that's kind of untouched by blue-collar society? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I do. Or maybe I want a guy that's gone through the stuff that I've gone through and can look at that stuff with those eyes. But are those eyes the right eyes for that problem? I don't know. I'd have to sit down and think about what I actually think about that. Because, like, you'd catch me on any given day saying the exact opposite. You know, where I think I want someone that has experience in political circles to handle political matters. Because if I would say I'm trying to have a party catered, I'd say I want a caterer that knows how to deal with cooking food for 1,000 people. But on the slice of the thing, I would say, hey, man, it seems to me that political meandering is what's screwing us up in the first place. So maybe I don't want a political guy there, you know?
Yeah, I don't want a political guy. I don't want the guy at the cashier at the Walmart. I want the guy who owns Walmart because he's obviously shown some success or whatever. You know what I'm
saying? He's made some decisions that affect a lot of people.
The big guy, yeah. Somebody who's shown they've done something. I think that's where Trump has been popular with people. I haven't followed him that much over the years. I never watched his TV shows and that stuff. So I'm not a pro or con Trump before I got into it. But I think that's what people have liked about him. At least he's done something. As opposed to Hillary, who's been a lifetime politician. She's never done anything but be a politician.
You know, I was talking to a guy, some fellows at work the other day, cause, you know, and I think they're leaning that direction. What they really like about Trump is they feel like he's honest. And I said, actually, you know, he does come off that way. He comes off as honest, but he just comes off as an honest jerk. You know what I'm saying? Like, I suppose at least you're getting what you think you're paying for. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But he is pretty true to himself, and he's pretty proud of himself, and he'll say so.
And he's socially awkward.
And he's extremely socially awkward.
Which makes him a rotten politician, but that's why I think he'll probably be better at it. But
well, that's the thing.
I'll probably disagree with half the stuff he does, though.
And what is, I always keep coming back to that line out of the American president, where they say, look when people get to the water and then all there is beach, they'll drink the sand. You know what I'm saying? Where they're like, there's no actual water available. They're just like, I'll take the closest thing to water, which happens to be sand, and I'll drink that because I don't know the difference. Give me something. I don't know. You know, this has been talked to death everywhere else, but like, I mean, just as from the common level, as a guy that's got to put a pen to a piece of paper come November, I'm like, I just, dang it. You know, like, I'm confused by the whole
process. You're having to consider things that, like, you just wouldn't expect to have to consider.
That's right.
Yeah. It's an interesting season. Like, I've heard that from a lot of people kind of talking about the debates. The climate. It's not that there's not anything like it with, like, how people treat each other. That's been the case ever since people have been running for president. But it is, there's just some uniqueness in the kind of the situation that with people, neither party being real happy. Like, both of them should have been able to put this away if either one was a much stronger candidate, because both of them are not strong candidates.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting time. So anyway, yeah, the world needs advice, in perspective. We need some advice on that. I tried to look up just before the show started. You know, 2 weeks ago we were talking about the pastor who got caught with the cocaine, and he said the devil's a liar. And then I was hoping there was going to be an update as to whether he was prosecuted or not, or like whether set free. But so there's oddly no news.
Well, I mean, there's no follow up report of whether of like if he's been freed, charged, nothing.
No, yeah, there isn't any no Facebook updates from him, no news coverage just to say what has happened to. The Right Reverend Kenneth DeBose and his cocaine purchasing. Remember he said he was trying to counsel the guy selling the cocaine?
Yeah, I remember that. Remember he said the devil's a liar was his defense.
Yeah.
Does it say the church? Like, does he have a church website? Are they looking to hire right now?
He said it was clear in the story that he intended to preach that week. Like, he'd already
been...
Well,
that doesn't mean the leadership's going to allow it.
No,
I've seen that many times. Oh, yeah, I'm still here. Like, no, you're not.
The guy shows up and said, I'm ready to preach. Yeah, I don't know.
Could be doing that from home. Unless that's our house, then you'll be doing it from someone else's home.
You know what I there was another story out on the Christian Post, and it said, atheist to stay minister as United Church of Canada plans formal hearing on possible defrocking. That's got to be the most awkward situation. When you're a minister of something, and then you declare yourself an atheist, but you don't want to leave. Like, I just don't understand. I don't understand these people.
I don't even know how this is a discussion.
The Reverend Greta Vosper, an openly atheist minister, is presently undergoing an investigation by the church to determine if she can remain an ordained clergy. She doesn't believe in the church structure at all. Like, it says, they had a hearing on it. Said Ms. Vosper may remain in ministry at West Hill United Church, Toronto, Southeast Presbytery. This one, no one goes to that church. It takes too long to say until the results of the formal hearing are known. I just don't understand, like, what's the motivation to to go to your church and say, hey, look, I don't believe in any of this. But no, I find it outrageous that you would fire me for such a thing. Like, there's no other job that works like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It is kind of, maybe it's slightly indicting, right? Like, of maybe the way that the, some of the broader church stuff has gone, right? Where basically people say, I like the environment here. I like the people. Whether or not we're preaching about Jesus is inconsequential, right? Like, I like the setup. I like the form and the function. I'd like to stay, even though I have no principle or basis of belief of which we all can agree
that,
on.
The Unitarian Church says that. I mean, that's the basic things.
They that's want their core belief.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I get it. And here's the thing is, people are kind of made, God made people for community. So I actually even understand it. I think it won't do what they want it to do because it's missing Jesus. But like, in general, I understand people's want to get together in that way because I think they're kind of created for that. But like, it was interesting that it said, there was a statement that was released by the committee that was reviewing, and they said, this is not the decision that some people had wanted. And this was the interesting point. Some will be disappointed and angry that this action has been taken, believing that the United Church may be turning its back on a history of openness and inclusivity. Now, I mean, certainly, even rational people can understand that if your definition of inclusiveness into your organization includes people who don't believe about anything about your organization at all, but are otherwise wanting to identify with that organization, like, that's weird.
Well, here's probably why that person wants to keep identifying with them. I'm assuming this person's up a few years in age, and if it's part of a denomination, they probably have quite a healthy retirement plan.
Yeah, she does look like she, I mean, maybe.
And there we go. She doesn't want to get rid of that. This is probably several hundred thousand dollars worth of retirement that will disappear if she's defrocked.
Oh, yeah.
Dang, Dan, you joined the wrong organization. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I'm an independent church. We got nothing. I got
that's
nothing.
Right.
I have zero.
I went strictly dependent Jesus-loving because the pay wasn't as good.
3 years strong, nothing to show for it.
Yes.
Amen, brother.
Hey, there might be an opening at the United Church of Canada. Just give it a few months, I guess.
Apparently, you don't have to hold any type of belief at all. You can take this position.
Yeah, they're pretty open.
Well, I bet you anything, that's the issue she's really at.
No, that makes sense. I mean,
you'll
sentence.
See that. A lot in the denominations, people will come to different conclusions, even on doctrinal stands, but they can't change what they say publicly because they'll lose their pension.
Oh man,
that's one of the reasons. As a young man, I said, "I'm going independent all the way. I just don't want to be. I don't want to play the game."
Right. Right. You
know? Anyway.
Okay.
That's just my little.
Done. All right, Mike. Who else needs help? We've worked out the problems of Canada.
All right, ready. Dear Life from the Path. I lost my longtime job, but have remained in contact with a few former coworkers, meeting for an occasional lunch or dinner. One woman in particular has been pushing to meet me at my place. Life from the Path, I'm not proud of where I live now, and I don't want to have to explain this to her. So far, I have sidestepped by saying that I prefer to get out of the house, but I'm worried that one day she will announce that she's in my neighborhood and ask to drop by. I'm really uncomfortable with that, but I don't know how an appropriate response that will keep our relationship cordial, because I do value the times we see each other. Any suggestions? I'm not really sure how to respond. That's basically she used to work. She used to work with a group of people, and since she quit working there, she had to move into a house that I don't know is little less than her. I don't know, coworkers are assuming she's used to.
I mean, why? I don't know why she cares. She doesn't work with them anymore. Did I miss the heart of it?
Yeah, yeah. Like, what's the beef? That she's just embarrassed about where they live and doesn't want to have people over?
Yeah, I'm not proud of where I live now, and I don't want to have to explain this to her.
Well, you don't have to.
Just say, hey, can we meet at the coffee shop instead?
Or you could do that, yeah. It's just a personal pride issue. It's like, get over yourself.
But that's what she's saying, is that, like, she's pushed it outside of the home quite a bit, but she's worried that someone's going to be in the neighborhood and just stop by.
Oh, well, I mean,
well, here's the deal. If you live in a slummy neighborhood, why would people be shopping there or whatever?
Wait, what? They're just going to swing by? They're just hauling through some kind of dirt poor area?
Yeah. Hey, I'm in the crappy part of town. Is your place by perhaps in this area?
Yeah, there's a real junk ball house. Maybe my friend lives there.
Yeah, this don't make any sense at
so,
all.
So, I don't know. Own it. Own it. Whatever you got. Own it.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that's a good point. Like, if you're ashamed of it, clean it up. If you own it, like, if you're not ashamed of it, then have people buy.
Yeah.
That seems easy enough.
And I'm, you know, saying that, look, somewhat hypocritically, you know, my car that just died a couple weeks ago, It should have died like 8 years ago, probably.
Right.
But I kept driving it, and it's had hail damage, and it's starting to rust, and all that. You know, just it was ugly. And I used to kind of apologize for people. I did get in my car, yeah, it is my old car, you know, and I'd always make fun of it. And probably because it was a pride issue, because I really thought it was ugly. And I was just trying to cover for it. Like, haha, we're funny. This is funny.
Well, you know, there is some politicking to be done there, though, right? Because, like, if someone gets in your shabby Jethro Mobile and you don't make any mention of it, then that you're worried that they might be under the impression that you think it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And that you so literally don't know the difference.
You just want to clarify that.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, so I know this stinks, and because I got, like, gumballs on the floor rotting, and, you know.
Yeah, so just so you know, I understand this thing is a junk shop, but it's currently the way I get around, so love it.
I see the hail damage on the hood.
Yeah, that's no problem.
Right. I own it.
Let's see what Secular has to say. Secular says, there are various excuses you can use if she wants to drop by. Your place might not be presentable now. Or you might not fill up for company. Or you are in the middle of a project you need to finish. Or you'll be leaving shortly and don't have time that day. Or you could just tell straight-up lies, like you're planning on doing. If you rotate the deflections as needed, your friend may eventually get the idea without you having to say it directly. So, I mean, what purpose did that serve? You basically said, look, I could tell the truth, or I could tell 5 lies, and maybe they'll eventually understand the truth through my lying? These are terrible. This is terrible advice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just be out with it. I don't understand the concern here.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is always, well, it's not always harder, but in general, it's, the truth is harder than lies. And until you've got the lies stacked up like Jenga dots, and then all of a sudden they're following you around and about to topple over, and now which one was harder, right? You should have just come out with the truth and said, yeah, listen, my place isn't really, it ain't even designed for company. It's barely designed for me to habit in it. And so let's go to the coffee shop.
Yeah.
I feel like that's fair.
Yeah, yeah, my place isn't a good place to congregate. Let's do, can we do somewhere else? That seems real easy.
Yeah. I do that all the time.
Yeah. I do, yeah. I
my,
do
my wife would not allow anyone near our house.
Right.
I don't know, Dan. I've been in your place. Doesn't seem that bad.
You haven't been there lately.
Oh, we've really torn the place up.
Not since the grandpuppy was born.
All right, here we go. Dear the grandpuppy of terror. You're live from the path. My wife and I were sitting in a restaurant one night. A woman, her boyfriend, and 2 children were at the table next to us. The boyfriend was loudly verbally abusing the children, oh boy, 5 to 8 years old, for not eating the food he had paid for. It was truly abuse. His language was awful, and it lasted for 20 to 30 minutes. I wasn't concerned about it ruining our night out, but rather what this guy must be like in private with those kids and that woman. Should I have called the police? Would it have made it worse? How many people run into this and don't say anything? What's your default, Ben?
My default is to not say anything. You know what? Actually, I was thinking about that this week. Not that particular example, but like trying to figure out what it takes for me to actually interject myself physically into a circumstance. Like, I'm real passive about stuff. Like, I'll see something, and I might see that, and like, I don't know, I'm probably on a crowd of 10, I'm probably the 9th guy to call the police. Yeah. Like, it takes a lot to get me to get involved in something. And I'm not sure that's a positive virtue. There's some wisdom in not, you know, flying off the handle at something or assuming that you're the right person to handle every situation. But, like, there's probably also a spot of which, not jumping into something otherwise allows things to persist that you actually could influence. Like, every story I ever hear about someone doing something kind on the street is because I passed a homeless guy and I thought, well, he seems to be moving pretty quick. He knows where he's going. I have no reason for me to interrupt it. And, like, he would have welcomed a ride. And so, or not saying anything to someone who looks like they're having a rough day. And I thought, I'm not the right person to do this. And then, like, a nice kind word from a stranger really would have changed everything. I'm just... You know, I would be the guy who doesn't do anything, but I'm not sure that's positive.
So I have to think, I'll process, will this ultimately help the situation, not just the situation, but their living arrangement, or is it going to make it worse? I'm going to call the police, get the police involved, it's going to be really embarrassing, really terrible, they're going to go home, and then dad's boyfriend, whatever, is really going to be angry, and that's when the abuse really happens. So did I help? Not at all, didn't do anything. You know, just interjecting your opinion or calling the police isn't necessarily, in every situation, the good thing to do.
Yeah, so I feel like calling the police is kind of the cowardly move. I feel like you got to man-to-man that thing.
Yeah, but still, what are you going to do? So you're going to get a fist fight with him? Okay, that's cool.
Well, I mean, I don't know that a physical confrontation is necessary. Like, I was just talking to Ben about this when we got here, but I was at the gas station today, and I was just buying a soda or whatever, and there was this guy in there, and he was just verbally berating the gal behind the counter. I mean, calling her every name in the book, swearing at her. I mean, he's a little drunk, you know, and so, I mean, he's got some stuff or whatever, but I mean, he was just, I mean, calling both the girls' names, saying it's ignorant women like you, and I'm using the word woman because I can't say the other one, and he was just having at this gal, and I was just paying for my soda, and I'm like, how long am I going to let this go on, you know? Like, I just sit there yelling at this gal, and yelling, and yelling, just being the biggest jerk I've been around in a long time. And what all I ended up doing was I thought, you know, obviously screaming at the guy not going to do any good, you know?
Right.
So I basically just opened the door to the gas station. I said, I think it's time for you to go, brother. And then he yelled at me, and you know, and we, you know, he yelled at me for a good 5 minutes still. He followed me to the parking lot, you know, and he was throwing his soda everywhere, and he kept dropping his vodka, and, you know, I'm like, and so I just kept, I was like, look, you dropped your stuff. I can grab it for you if you want to get heading out, you know? And he was still yelling and still yelling. I just kind of waited patiently for him to go, and I thought, what if he wouldn't want to leave? I mean, what happens here? Because I'm maybe a little bit quicker to jump in verbally, you know, than some. But like physically, I don't know that I'm ready to start tackling dudes. You know what I'm saying? Because Dan's right; it's not going to do any good. And let's say you hear this. This happens all the time at restaurants, where I hear people talking to their kids. And my immediate thought is, I got to pray for these kids, right? I got to help them see that what their dad is saying to them right now is not true. That is not true about them. And the way they're being spoken to is not the way that people should be spoken to. And pray that they can see the difference. And then sometimes I get home at night and think, man, should I have said something to the dad? Right? Just as a dad to another dad, hey, man, you're treating your kids like junk, you know? Like, you're not doing them any favors. You're making them feel terrible. You're verbally abusing them in front of people. You're making them feel an inch tall. That's not your job as a dad. And so if you never interject, I don't know. This is where I'm torn, because I get what you're saying, Dan. Are you making any long-lasting impression by doing a giant, you know, Colonel's Last Stand at the buffet? Probably not.
Because you got to be in some sort of relationship with someone to speak that kind of stuff into their life. You can't. A stranger came up to me and said, "I don't like the way you're putting gas in your car." What, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. What do you know about pumping gas?
And the next time I'll do it the same way again. I don't care about that. I don't know that person. I don't know their name. I don't know anything about them. They don't care about me. It's just. That's just their impression. That's how they do life. I do it differently. That guy's an idiot. I'm smart. That's what I'd be thinking.
Sure.
And that's what, you know, unless you have a relationship with someone, there's nothing you can do to alter their character. And maybe that's a cop-out, but that's
what I'm trying to get past,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
And because I think the same thing. I think, what am I possibly going to do? That guy doesn't know me from Adam. I seem like a self-righteous jerk, and there's no way that's going to get past any fence of his that's going to let it pass. But the problem with that kind of guy is he surrounds himself with jerks that agree with him.
Yep.
And so his community is always going to say, put the woman down, yell at the kids, you the man of the house, do what you want. And I'm like, so how can community ever get to him, right?
Because even if you're in relationship, yeah, I mean, it's going to take 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's not going to be that one conversation of, oh, my best friend just told me I'm an idiot. I guess I am. You know, I'm going to fight that for a while, because we have ego, we have pride, and that's all we know. But he's probably doing it because that's what was done to him, type of thing. It's a long term healing process or transformation process that goes on. That's not going to happen with one conversation or 2 or 3 confrontations. It's going to be long term.
Maybe I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it.
You're going to try the drive-by?
Is once again, I'm still in agreement with Dan, but I've never tried it the other way. Like, I've never had to say something to a guy or felt like it was my time to have a conversation with a dude that I don't know right off the bat. And maybe it's not about the way that he's treating his kids. Maybe it's that really creepy Jesus conversation like right now. I don't know. I know the Lord can do stuff. You know what I'm saying? Who am I to say this ain't the time? It don't make any logical sense to me. Like logically,
gotta come up with a gimmick or something, though.
Yeah,
you gotta wear a cape or something.
We need a tambourine.
Put on your cape and say, "Oh, here,
dude." You gotta have a tambourine and some kind of jumping ants.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Something's gotta have some kind of kitsch on the way in.
Because then he'll remember that.
Yeah, he'll say, "Remember that crazy Jesus man with the ants?" Yeah. I don't know, Nick Harris. What do you think? Any type of confrontation like that, does it have any chance of working at all?
Sometimes it don't work out for the best, because you know you got two sides that's flared up. You know, like. A lot of people don't like other people butting in. Like, they both can come back and argue with you. So, I mean.
Is it ever worth making the stand just so the kids see it? just so the kids see that one guy. I remember it was weird. We were at the buffet one time, and this one guy came up to my dad and said, you need to be treating your kids better. Here's what they're worth. And, like, is there any chance that they can grab onto that and believe it, even if the dad is not having any of it? Or am I just running around the world with wishes and sparkles, hoping that some interaction has done something?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it working, but it depends on how you come at them first. Like, how you approach them the first time, like, is the best way to, you know, think of that situation. Like, it's a certain way you got to come to them first so he feel like you're not really trying to offend them in a way.
Yeah.
You know, because most people like that just be like, oh, man, I just paid, I work hard for this money, and they don't want to eat the food, and, you know, like, people, you know, I don't know, pride, and, you know, people feel like they work hard for their money, so.
Yeah.
It's hard to really touch people like that, but, you know, even in them situations, I think God will make you have the right words for that conversation.
That's true. Maybe that's the right attitude to have, is maybe instead of just praying that the kids can see past this, is to say, I'm open to whatever you want me to do in this situation, Lord. You know that I probably don't want to go confront this dude, but mm-hmm. if it's the time, I need you to embolden me. Give me the stuff, because I don't want to do it. Like, that's why I'm always fearful of that. Yeah. And I think we've talked about that before, is where I'm imposing my will on God's, like, I'm sure this is not the time, because I just don't want to do it, you know? And so maybe it is the time. I mean, I got the guy out of the gas station. I mean, if to be honest, he was in a wheelchair, and I was considering whether I could push him out, and that would be wrong. You know, but then
here you go, buddy. You can do it in a friendly way.
Well, that's the thing. Is Ben brought up a good point. If the guy had legs and he continued that out, would me and the buff pizza man get him out of there? Well, probably. Yeah. You know, so like,
wait, the pizza guy was in the nude?
No, buff is in. He's
strong.
Yeah, what? Linebacker.
One doesn't preclude the other. Okay, but that's good news. Okay, I'm with you.
Naked linebacker pizza man. I say, don't make my pizza.
It seemed like God was there the whole time with you, though, while the conversation was going on. Like, all you had to do was say a couple of words, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And him and his vodka slowly left the thing while verbally berating the country.
I was kind of a front row seat on watching this happen once, and I think I shared that before. It was sometime in the last year. We're at a Walmart, and some child was misbehaving, and the mom brought the child out, and I don't know if she spanked him or was yelling at him or something. I don't know. And some gal in the car drove by, rolled on the window, and talked to the parent like, hey, you're parenting wrong. And then I saw them get in the van, and I thought, this is not going to be a good evening for that poor child.
No.
Because she didn't like what she heard. Because then she yelled at the lady, and then you know, all the emotions were riled up, and it was just worse. And I just thought, wow, this is a bad day for that poor kid. Now, the kid deserved anything he had going, but that's beside the point. It just got worse because some stranger, you know, interjected their opinion. And, I don't know how that ended. But.
Man. Boy, that's a tough call, boys.
Yeah. Well, already they're angry people, right?
No, I mean, yeah, they are.
So you confronting them is not going to make them like, oh, you're right.
No, they're just going to put their hand deeper in the bucket of filth they're currently using and pick up the really grody stuff out the bottom, you know? But, like, it just seems so wrong to let it go. It just seems so wrong to passively act like one of God's kids is just getting made to feel like they're absolute worth nothing. And I'm just sitting there having a wholesome dinner at the buffet with my family, watching it go down, going, who do you think you are in your comfy castle? You know, saying, I got my two covered. Good luck, world. You know, that just, it feels so crappy, you know? Dang, someone say something comforting.
Yeah.
Nope.
I was trying to think of something comforting. I don't think so. Here's the thing is, I think I wouldn't take saying something off the table. But I wouldn't call it normative. Like, you better have a pretty good inclination that there's a reason that you're saying something. And I wouldn't, here's the thing. If whatever it is that you want to say, that you're going to go through with saying, is for your own self-satisfaction to make it so that whatever it is that you were saying you got off your chest, then you should keep your stupid mouth shut.
A little self-righteous.
Because usually that's what it is like, I can't just not say something. And what we're satisfying is our urge to say something, not to actually improve a circumstance.
You know I'm a better parent than you.
Right. Yeah.
Take a look at this.
Yeah. So like, if I'd run it through that filter first, think, well, maybe God wants me to say something. Well, if it's due to your own self-righteousness, then no, I think you're probably wrong about that. You should not say anything.
Now, my pride don't let that filter come out. I keep that thing buried in my own bucket of filth.
You need to call a guy, Mike. You have to call a fella about that one. So, like, I mean, here's the deal. Like, is it by some weird stretch, like, this is the thing that causes someone to rethink what they're doing? I suppose it's a possibility. If you are the understanding that you are the deliverance of these circumstances, you are probably incorrect about that. So I wouldn't say that it's off the table to not ever put yourself to interject in that situation, but I'm almost certain it's not in the way that you want to do it. Nine times out of 10, probably 99 out of 100, I just walk away from that, praying for the children and the parent. Maybe one out of 100, it's yours to say something, but it probably isn't the way that you want to do it. Cause you're probably actually inviting yourself deeper into something. And unless you're prepared for that, I think you should stay sitting.
Bummer. Secular says, oh, the question was,
should I call the law?
Should I have called the police? Would it have made it worse? Yeah. Secular says, yes. If you had intervened, it probably would have made matters worse. Unfortunately, the police can't arrest someone for verbal abuse. However, since the man was making a scene, the manager of the restaurant should have stepped in because he was disturbing the other diners. Yeah, I don't know. There's something just kind of boyish about, I'm going to get the manager. I mean, not only did you not have a man-to-man conversation, you put on your Little League outfit and be like, I'm going to tell the manager, and he's going to come yell at you, and you're going to be in big trouble.
That's true. Micro levels of authority really reek of non-manliness.
Yeah, I'm going to tell someone else. They're going to come after you.
Yeah, actually, I put the same way as like when you call into like a call center and your first reaction is, let me talk to the supervisor. Like, here's the thing, is like, sometimes that's necessary. Like, I've worked in that call center environment. Sometimes it is necessary to talk to a supervisor, right? But like, if that is your first line of defense to solve a problem because you can't deal with a person, like, I consider that a little bit unmanly. I feel like you should try to hash it out with someone until you get to a point where like, the person is obviously incompetent. And then someone should probably tell the manager so that they can work on replacing that guy because he's incompetent. But like, sometimes you get folks who are just like, hey, I'm very important. I need to talk with the supervisor, and I consider that unmanly. I think you should deal with whoever life deals with you and use your adequate people skills to actually interact with someone for a while before you do something like that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Dear Life from the Path, my sister, Dawn, recently got engaged to a man I detest. They have been dating for 2 years. I don't trust him, and I believe he is controlling her. He has lied to me and to my parents and has strained Dawn's relationship with our family by constantly making her choose between either him or us. Dawn worked hard to earn her master's degree and is now earning a great salary. Her fiancé has no education beyond high school. Oh no. Constantly switches jobs and uses my sister for financial support. I have spoken to her multiple times in the past about my concerns and at one point made it clear that I would not attend her wedding. Now that Dawn has decided to move forward with the relationship, am I required to go? My parents, despite not supporting my sister's marrying this man, still plan to attend and are urging me to go. I don't think I can stomach seeing it. What do I do?
Just go.
Yeah.
You don't have to like them. You're obviously not going to see them often. They're married. He's going to keep that wedge between you. But, you know.
He has lied to me and my parents and has strained Dawn's relationship with our family by constantly making her choose between either him or us. Here's the deal. It's like, I believe some of that's probably true. But, I mean, she also has to agree to that choice.
Yeah, right.
I mean, unless he's the, you know, the character of a man that we're talking about that, like, is completely controlling and really is, every bit as bad as she says so. Like, I mean, has a master's degree. She's not an idiot. And she's agreeing to do these things with this man. You know, so like maybe you're more upset that your sister don't want to hang out with you as much as she used to, or her life's moving in a direction where you're not as big of a part, or all those things. And
yeah.
Apart from that, if she wants to marry this dude, I mean, it's kind of odd for you to draw a line in the sand and be like, well, I'm not going to go. Well, I mean, could we make her wedding any more about you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like to prove what point here?
Yeah. I mean, my sister didn't show up. Well, halt the wedding.
Yeah, because essentially by doing something like that, you're kind of putting someone in a position and saying, look, it's either me or him, right?
Yeah.
You're saying like, oh, hey, either don't have the wedding because I won't go. Like, if you want me at the wedding, you need to marry a different guy. I'm like, that's a pretty big card to play, and it's going to be pretty awkward when you're wrong which decision she's going to make.
Yeah, because that affects, like, every Christmas, you know? This is like the rest of their married life. You just caused issue. It's not just the wedding day.
Yeah, and here's the thing, is like, you're gonna have a hard time apologizing your way out of that.
Yep.
Your pride is, you're gonna hold on to it for a decade. You're not gonna be able to adequately apologize for another decade after that. You're gonna piss 20 years down the road because you're stamping about some other problem that you have. Yeah, you need to go and shut up and just figure out a way to deal with it.
Yeah, I think she should just pray. Just pray that God reveal whatever that she thinks the boyfriends or the guy that's engaged to her sister is, doing, basically.
Yeah.
If she feel a certain way, like he gotta be a bad guy doing something like that, but, I mean, it gotta be facts, like pure facts, so, I don't know. I should just say, just pray for him, for God to reveal if he's up to something or not.
Yeah, pray for the sister that she would, her eyes would be clear, right? She'd be able to see what's going on. If you got it wrong, are you willing to pray that, hey, if I got this wrong, let me see it clearly? That type of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a hard prayer to have answered. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you got it wrong. Ah, man.
Shoot.
Okay. But tell you what, it's freeing, though, right? Like, I've had God do that before. I've been praying on something. I'm like, I feel like I ain't seeing this right. And then it turns out I was backwards the whole thing. I had it completely wrong. I had made assumptions that I shouldn't have made. I made character assassinations that I didn't need to make. And then I ended up looking at it, and God said, look, yeah, you was just straight wrong about that. And, man, I felt like such a fool. But it was totally freeing that I didn't have to carry all this baggage that I had created around with me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Secular says, go to the wedding. If this man is awful as you say he is, your sister is going to need all the support she can get from people who love her. One of the things that insecure, controlling men try to do is isolate their victims. Letting Dawn know that you love her and will always be there for her will make it much harder for her husband to do.
What?
Yeah, and if it does fail, the marriage, then is she going to come to you now? Or you've already let her down? I mean...
Yeah, and people never want to hear, see, I told you so.
Yeah.
Like, and they would expect that. Like, the marriage goes to crap, and she's like, I got to get out of here. I could go to my sister's, but all she's going to be like is, I told you,
yeah.
Terrible.
Remember I didn't go to your wedding?
Yeah.
This is why.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Yeah, that's terrible. That's not a good way to live anyway. That's a faithful in the means, let God handle the ends, right? Pray for the right thing, be faithful to what you do, you love people, and stop acting like this.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, this one, yeah. Dear Life from the Path. What's the appropriate response in a social situation when you're introduced to a person you have met several times before, but they act like it's the first time? I usually just smile and play along, but now I'm starting to feel like it's intentional. Am I that forgettable? Well, I mean, it's not like they got a club.
Well,
like all the people that have met Kim, and they start acting, let's act like we don't know Kim.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Like, if the conclusion was that it's intentional, then it doesn't mean you're actually forgettable. It just means someone is intending to make you feel forgettable. And so, like, you need to figure out which one it is. If you are actually a forgettable person, then there's no reason to hold someone accountable for that. You're legit forgettable.
Yeah, it sounds like it's happening a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe you should tell you something.
Wait, here's the deal. This goes away when you remember them. Like just remember them well.
Yeah.
And then they'll eventually remember you.
No, I'd grow a mustache.
Like a distinct, like a Raleigh Fingers?
Yeah, I in fact, here's the deal. I was out working this week, and I met a guy with a very distinct mustache, and I nicknamed him Whiskers. And I will remember Whiskers for all my days because of his very distinct mustache.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, if you're really that worried about it, I'd find some way to distinguish yourself. I'd either grow a mustache if you're a lady, or I would wear, I would turn one eyebrow pink or something. You know what I'm saying? Something that really makes you stand out. Get some attention.
Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, though. I remember I went to, I did like a semester in London. It was like 10 weeks, but it was a semester in London. And, the roommate that I had there, I nicknamed him Fats Cobain. And here's the deal. He looked like Kurt Cobain only because he had long hair. And he was taller than me, but that was about it. But like, for some reason, but distinctly, that's how I refer to the man, and I'll remember him. Because of that. But like, that's not because any of that was actually, really accurate about him. It's just because that's what I put in my mind. So that's kind of in the eye of the namer. Not the namee, not the guy with the mustache.
What if you wanted to psychologically kind of implant how you wanted yourself remembered? How would you go about that?
Dress nice and shower.
Well, that'll make you stand out from the crowd? What are you, at a garbage men convention?
I don't know, but if they're going to remember me, it's because they'll say, hey, was that a nice dressed man? Smell good.
No, that's true. You could dress up like a 50s Hollywood actor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, really overdo it. Dapper Dan yourself in there.
Yeah.
People are like, whiz bang, that guy's got some zip.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you could get to the root of the problem and just think, like, who is she basically trying to impress? Because it's like, if you're not trying to be forgotten, like, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like she's trying to impress somebody. Like, she want to be noticed by a certain individual, maybe.
That's true. Maybe people actually do remember, but it's not with the impression that she wanted to leave, right? Like, they said she stands out so much that they're like, hey, that's Amy, or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Instead, they're like, oh, yeah, we've met before. I mean, there's got to be a million people that I've shook hands with before that if they were to walk in front of me again, I'd go, I don't know. Sometimes I watch some of the old versions of the show, and one of the guests will be on. I'm like, who's that?
Yeah, right. We talked to so-and-so for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean, it took up a good chunk of my life that night, and then here I am 2 years later. I'm like, I don't even know who that person is. That's terrible. That explains our ratings.
Who are those guys? So, like, is it the wrong expectation to think that someone would remember you? Based upon what Nick Harris is saying, like, it kind of makes sense. It's like the only reason you'd be disappointed is because you assume they would remember you and that you are indeed memorable. Yeah. And so, like, maybe just drop the expectation.
Yeah, well, and maybe, you know, maybe you have a tendency to put more weight on situations that are actually there, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, especially of a certain age, you know, like, it's name every conversation you ever had with a girl in high school, you're like, oh, yeah, that really meant something. Either good or bad, you're like, oh, I've totally destroyed it. This woman will never talk to me or look at me in the face again.
Yeah, right. I remember how she said that dangling participle.
Yeah.
It sticks with me forever. Now I can have, like, long conversations with people and walk away thinking, I'm not really sure what they said, to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe you just inject a lot of weight on a situation that didn't really exist. And so maybe you're just a weighty person. Maybe you should just put your conversations in perspective where, you know, when you have a run-in with a guy at a gas station and he wanted the last soda and so did you, and you're like, you can take it. And you're like, man, me and that guy are going to know each other forever. We'll run into each other again, you know, and he'll always remember that time that I gave him that soda.
That reminds me of an interaction I had 2 days ago at the Walmart. I was getting out of my car, and I had my keys on me, and I was walking away from my car, and I thought, I don't need to take, or my sunglasses, I thought, I don't need to take these in the store. So I started walking back to my car so I could put my sunglasses away, and there was a guy trying to park next to me, and so I was blocking it, and so him and I kind of met eyes. And so I could wave my hand up and say, you know, thanks for waiting on me. I just put my sunglasses away. And so about 15 minutes later, I run into him in the paper plate aisle. And I really hope you remember, because I saw his face and I recognized him. And I said, we meet again. And then I just kept walking. And based upon that story, I suppose it's possible that I put more into that situation than he did. And he had no idea who I was.
Yeah, he's still thinking.
You're just a faceless guy blocking a parking spot, you know?
Is that a job interview I didn't get?
Yeah, he thinks there's a creeper in the paper goods aisle coming after him. And I thought we really had a connection. Crap. I might have put too much into that.
Nope, you're the creeper in the story.
We meet again.
The question was, am I that forgettable? Secular's advice was, I doubt it. My advice is to be polite. The next time it happens, smile warmly and say, we've met. Nice to see you again, Gloria. And then move on.
There's no reason to do that.
What do you mean?
You going to shame somebody because they can't place your face?
I've caused this problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, this happens at church a lot. Where I've met somebody a couple weeks ago, and they're like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, pretty good, I'm Mike, you know? And they're like, I've been coming here for like a month. And I'm like, oh, man, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm crappy with people. I mean, what do I say in my own defense? You were not important enough for me to remember. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the truth of the matter is, I probably looked at you, I was polite, we shook hands, and everything was fine. And then a month later, I'm like, hey, is this your first time here? What I learned was, you don't ask that question no more. You don't ever ask anybody if they're first time here. You're like, hey, I'm Mike. How you doing? Oh, pretty good, Mike. Remember we met a couple weeks ago? Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I remember. How's it been going? That's a pretty easy one.
Yeah, pretty good. Did you look into that one thing? And then I go, oh, man. No, I don't know what that is.
I forgot.
No, it's been a busy week.
Yeah.
That's terrible. See, the problem is like, if you own up to it, people will get it. Do it with some humility. You know, I'm not above saying, look, practice it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, figure out what you're going to say. It's not like you're trying to be phony. You're just like, when I get caught in a situation where I've completely screwed it up, what's the most humble, polite way to say, yeah, you know, I don't know. I've totally screwed this up, you know?
I've never had a circumstance where I've said, we've met before, work out. Where someone would go, oh, yeah, I remember. Like, they never actually remember. And then I look like the guy who put way more into the conversation than they did. And it makes you look a little pathetic. I feel like you shouldn't say that.
Yeah, now I've run into situations where I know I've met somebody before. We were reintroduced and we shook hands like it was the first time, only to have them like 20 minutes later go, that's where I remember you from. And then it hits them. You know, like maybe it's just got to get in somebody's head a while and stew. And they're like, yeah, that's the guy. And then everything's cool again. But like, yeah, is it best to make a situation out of it? No.
Yeah,
just let it pass.
I can think of three distinct times where it was someone who was like in a, broadly a bigger social station in life, be it at work or media personality or something, where I've run into them and like I said, oh yeah, we've met before, and like they did not remember me, and then it was really awkward. Because then I have to try to explain, and they still don't remember. And then, yeah, I look real pathetic. Like, I diary about it. And, like, they didn't think it was important, so don't recall it at all.
Yeah, and
I wouldn't bring it up.
Isn't that the where it happens more often, right? Like, when you meet, the boss that's three levels above your boss, and you were like, hey, I'm Mike, I work at the accounting office or whatever, you know, and then he come back into town 6 months later, he's like, yeah, remember we met? He's like, man, I visited like 3,000 employees over the last 6 months. I don't know you from the water cooler.
No, yeah, let him go, oh, yeah, Ben, yeah, I remember we talked about blah, 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 your family, blah, blah, blah. And then you think to yourself, yeah, that guy remembers me. But like, if you're trying to shove it up from the other direction, you look pathetic.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, don't bring that up.
Okay, dear life from the path, I'm a recent divorcee who has started dating again. Mm-hmm. I have been seeing this guy, also divorced, for a few months, and he recently told me he loves me. Oh, man. There's definitely a mutual attraction, but I'm not ready for love again, which we've discussed in great detail. When I ask him why he loves me, he can't answer specifically. As a standard dude. His usual reply is something along the lines of, I just do. I can't help but think maybe he doesn't really love me if he can't explain why. Am I overthinking this?
Yes.
Is our relationship moving too fast? What should I do?
I mean, one's a real easy question. The other was much more loaded.
If you don't want to be in love, don't date.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Hey, I decided to buy a TV through Rent-to-Own, and now there's a TV in my living room.
And I don't get it.
I just don't know what to do with it. How do I get this TV not to be here?
I go have coffee in the donut shop every morning. And now I'm starting to eat donuts.
of course you are.
These consequences are overbearing.
I mean,
stop it.
Yeah, like, what is it that? What was she expecting to happen?
Get your, what do you call it?
Butt.
Well, get off the dating site. What do you call it? Your profile.
Yeah, right.
I kept trying to say portfolio. I thought, no, get your profile off the dating site. Quit hanging out with this one dude. You know. Stop it!
You're swiping through and says, oh, hot Tina, looking for like.
and dudes don't have a list of why they love you.
No.
They just do.
No. Yeah.
I mean, here's the deal. Are you going to hold him... You're basically putting a guy in a corner here. Like, the dude is... he's popped the I love you first, right? It's a fairly bold step for a guy. Mm-hmm. I don't care what kind of confident man you are. When you throw that out there, you're like, I hope that was well received, right? Like, men will act like they do this stuff all the time, but like, it's a pretty large blow when you throw something out there and it does not come back to you, right? The dudes take that poorly. And so he's taking the time to chuck that out there and see how it goes. And then when you ask him to explain it, he didn't think any farther past, I'm going to say this thing because it's what I feel, you know? And then you're like, tell me what more you like. Because if you've gone down that road with a woman before, she'll say, well, why do you love me? And then you'll say something that is completely, like, offensive somehow without you even knowing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I find you very huggable. Oh, what do you mean I'm comfortable and fat? Is that what you're saying? You're basically like, oh, no, I'm so stupid. You know? I mean, if the man has been divorced before, that means he's been around ladies. And he knows there's just certain roads that it's better off if you gray your way around. And trying to explain why exactly you love a woman without offending her in some way is an obstacle course. And he is wise enough to stay away. And so I think you got to cut the brother a little bit slack. And I think Dan's right. If you're not interested in love, well, I mean, what are you doing? You know, you just want someone to pay for your dinner or whatever.
It all depends, though, Mike. It all depends. Like, it's always two sides of the story. Like, it depends on where they at physically in their relationship. Because maybe she feeling like he really just trying to get something else and just trying to play the role for a minute, you know?
Sure.
Because, I mean, they is only a couple of months into dating. So
that's true.
You know, so it could be like he not really showing me he really love me, you know, like he maybe just saying it, but you know, somebody that's really in love, like they show you in ways and they say things so that she wouldn't really have to question that. Like he could just be pressing up on her, so.
Now see, this is weird, right? Because this is the one time I've defended a man. And Nick Harris does not agree.
Yeah, you know, I'm like devastated. When you got a daughter, bro, you gotta be on point with it, bro. You know, like you gotta let the kids know, like it's all type of guys out here, you know, like in a couple of months. It's
but he's not even
really
a fancy talker, Nick Harris. He comes out with "I love you, I just do." That's, he's not suave.
That's
at
what
all.
I'm saying. If but, he's in it for the goods.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even come up with something better than "I love you, I don't know why."
He stinks
at it.
That's right. He rides
the
bench.
He got to be an attractive guy. Like, he probably don't have to say much, you know? Like,
I think she would have brought that up.
I've never been starstruck by an attractive man, but I'm telling you.
I mean, not like that, but not to me. I'm not here on the...
The longest half hour of my life was the first time I worked up the courage and told my wife, Cheryl, "I love you." And she didn't respond at all. She just looked at me like, "Yeah." And it was like a half an hour later, she's, "Okay, I do too."
Oh, man.
She said, "Yeah, what you said earlier, I do too." God. The whole time I'm like, I said it, didn't I? I'm like,
did it come out right? What did I say?
Did she hear me? Did she not hear me? I mean, so she's like completely blew it off. Like, it didn't happen. She just, I mean, like.
Oh, man.
Man, that was the longest half hour of my life.
That is tricky.
I feel like I'd have to poop after that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, my stomach would be in knots. I'm like,
oh, it was.
I don't feel well.
Yeah, some guys not big talkers. So, you know, either it could be one or the other. Maybe he really felt what he meant. Well, man, what he felt, so...
Well,
I mean,
is
it
the
probably
question
got
then,
shut down.
If she's not out there for love, what is she out there for? Right? Because that was her statement, is I'm not out here for love. Well, I mean, then what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Probably, like, that's just as deceiving as a dude, you know, doing the exact same thing that we're talking about, right?
Yeah. But it depends what type of pressure he putting on her. Like, maybe it's like, you know...
I think you got a dude in mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like you've got this character worked up. And, like, this is the dude. He's just an ultimate player at the end.
I mean, you just never know. You know, like, it could go either way. Like, True. He can just, like I told you, you know, you have a daughter, man. You got to, I don't know, like, it's a different type of guys that'll go certain lengths to get whatever, you know?
I think, Nick, what Mike's saying is that she's come out and basically said, I'm not looking for love. I'm just dating. It seems like she's after the same thing.
But maybe she's just not ready to jump all the way off the porch with the guy. Like, maybe she's just trying to make him wait to stick around and see, like, if he the right guy. You know, maybe she is thinking long term.
So you think she's lying when she says, "I'm not out for love"? She really is out for love. She just doesn't know that he's out for love and so tells him that she ain't out for love.
Yeah.
Oh, that's real tricky, man. That's just made my mind hurt, Nick Harris.
Hey, man, Nick Harris know people. That's the truth.
you can look at Genesis, man, and tell you, like, man and woman won't understand each other for reasons unknown, you know? So, we'll never understand each other.
I'm going to have Nick Harris read the Bible to me at night. Yeah, I don't know why this goes down.
Yeah, that is like a bumper sticker or something you put on a tombstone. Men and women will not understand each other for reasons unknown, Genesis.
The quarrel.
Great. That is great.
The squeaky roof.
Oh, boy. Okay. Secular says, the question was, am I overthinking? What should I do? Blah, blah, blah. Secular says, take your time and continue getting to know this man. Do not let yourself be rushed into any commitment for which you are not ready. Divorce can be painful and leave one or both partners feeling a lack of self-esteem.
Well, I think she knows that. They've both been divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it does?
Yep. Because he seems unable to put his feelings into words, instead of asking him why he loves you, let him demonstrate the depth of his love for you through his actions. Time will tell if he is sincere. Okay, so no, I agree. Like, just because he popped that out doesn't mean that obviously it's good's time, right? Like,
yes.
I mean, you still got to vet the thing out. And if you don't love the man, then don't say so. You know, and just say, hey, man, we're getting to know each other. I appreciate your feelings towards me or whatever. And so, you know, I'm not recommending that you automatically, like, put him at the top of your list as the best guy ever. But I am saying that, like, he's thrown the thing out there and you're not interested to even eventually meeting him there. If he says he loves you and you are absolutely not interested in loving him at all, that's probably a fair thing to tell him.
Yeah.
Right? And then if he's not interested, he'll go. if he is interested to the point where he really does love you like he says he does, he'll become stalker-like and follow you around until he changes your mind. That's how you pursue a lady. You come after him with fierce anger.
What? No, hold on. What? The thing went off the rails there. Yeah, it went off the rails for reasons unknown.
That's not good advice.
Never mind.
Okay, ready for one more, Ben?
Yeah, let's do one more, and then we're going to do a quiz on dreaming, and then we'll call the show.
Dear Life from the Path, my husband's 67-year-old sister recently borrowed a large sum of money.
Sorry, seven?
67.
Oh, I thought you said 6 to 7, like she wasn't sure on the age.
My husband's sister of unknown origin.
Yeah, go ahead.
My husband's 67-year-old sister recently borrowed a large sum of money, but my husband told her not to worry about paying it back.
Good.
They both receive Social Security benefits, but her payments are substantially larger. She supports only herself. His check supports us both. The problem is that for the past few months, she's been borrowing money she promises to pay back. But when the time comes, instead of repaying, she asks for more money. We can't afford it, but he can't seem to tell his big sister no, and it's causing problems in our marriage. I love my husband dearly, but I'm beginning to resent his sister for taking more money from us each month, and him for giving it to her. If I step in, I will be the bad guy. What is the best way to handle this situation? I got it. Just give her the money, and then stop being mad about it. Win-win. Who's with me?
I think she needs to step in.
Dad says no.
Cut her off. She's gambling.
What kind of relationship do you have? Does she have to have with the husband to be like, I can't step in? Like, have that conversation with your husband.
Yeah,
that seems completely reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, how's it gonna go, husband? We can't afford this. His reply: Yeah, we can.
No, we cannot.
I'm certain we can.
No, it's shaking out that we cannot.
Well, we should stop doing it then.
Yeah, I agree.
Resolved. I love you for unknown reason.
It's a provable thing, right? Like, either we can afford it or we can't. Whether she brings in more Social Security or not is irrelevant. If you think the money is going to okay things and it's beneficial, then keep giving her the money and learn to deal with it. If not, and you can't afford it, then you should stop doing it. But, like, that just seems like a conversation to have with your husband. And if she's afraid that the husband's going to say, my wife's the bad guy, then that's unhealthy. That's an unhealthy relationship with your spouse.
Yeah. Yeah, your husband definitely should know better than that. Even if he does feel that way, that's definitely not public knowledge for anybody. Here's the thing. Like, when people say this kind of stuff, this is what makes them untrustworthy to me, right? When they include a bunch of extraneous detail that is only put there to make me think one way about somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like, her checks are bigger. She's borrowing more money. You know, like, she tells a bunch of backstory stuff to purposely paint black hat, white hat. And really, the question really is my sister-in-law keeps borrowing money. We can't afford to continue sustaining her this way. Should I step in? Right? That's the crux of the question. And we can answer it without all the black hat, white hat stuff, right? Does it really matter that her check is bigger? Is it of a substantial... It doesn't matter if you can't afford it either way, right?
Yeah.
Let's say her check's smaller. Can you afford it? Still no. Well, it doesn't really change the argument, does it?
No, I don't think it matters.
All right.
Yeah, the two things that we need to know are, what is she doing with the money? Because that matters as to what, like, you know, maybe there's something of virtue of which that's why your husband is doing it, and he should be discussing with you. But, like, I would say it matters kind of what she's doing with the money, and it matters whether you can, and actually it doesn't even matter whether you can afford it or not. If the husband and wife can't agree that they should be giving money in this way and not paying it back, then that matters. So I would say some of the detail we have is not relevant. But, like, as part of the conversation is to, hey, here's why I'm giving money to my big sister and not paying it back. Can we decide that this is something we want to keep doing? I feel like those are important things, actually.
Secular says, step in and be the bad guy. She's probably gambling.
Really?
No, she didn't.
I said, score!
tell your husband's sister.
I mean, of course.
Tell your husband's sister she won't be getting any more money unless she pays back what she has already borrowed. Your sister-in-law probably won't like you for it, so be prepared to stand your ground and don't be surprised. Also, do not attend her wedding.
No! She didn't suggest to have the husband do it?
No.
Why not?
I know for a fact my wife would have had me do it. If it was my family doing that, she would go, you need to take care of this.
Yeah.
she would definitely ask me to do it. And frankly, I'd be upset if she had to do it because I wasn't.
Yeah. That's amazing. You made the decision. You caused whatever problem there was by not talking about it with your wife to begin with. And then now you have to repair it. Yeah, that seems totally on you.
Agreed.
Okay, I don't understand. All right, here we go. Quiz from the path. We're going to see how well we do on dreamers. Dreamers. Here we go. Number one. Why did God say to Abimelech in a dream that he was about to die? Because he had raped his sister Tamar? Because he had chosen Sarah to be his wife and she was married to Abraham? Because his wife and his female slaves were barren? Because he had taken possession of a well that belonged to Abraham?
It was the Sarah.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's because he had chosen Sarah to be his wife.
Yeah.
He has that dream, and then that's when he brings up to Abraham. Number two, in the first dream that Joseph had, what did he see? The stars and the moon, a plague of locusts, sheaves of wheat, angels ascending and descending a stairway.
Oh, the first dream.
It's sheaves the wheat.
Yeah.
That's his brothers, and then the next dream is the stars and moon, which
that adds the parents.
Brings in the parents, yeah. Yeah, sheaves the wheat. Three, what did the three branches represent in a dream that Joseph interpreted for the Pharaoh's cupbearer? Days, vineyards, nations, birthdays.
Was it sea, nations?
Branches. No, I think it's days because, like, it's between the cupbearer and the baker, and there's 3 days, hence one guy gets restored, and 3 days from there, one guy gets taken out. So I think it's days.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's days.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Four, what did King Solomon ask God for when God appeared to him in a dream and told him to ask what he would? Mercy, understanding, righteousness, wealth.
Understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, understanding. He got wealth because of that. Five. Who say, I had a dream? Sluggards? Dreamers?
What?
Prophets of God who prophesy in his name? Prophets who tell lies in the name of the Lord?
What?
Prophets who tell lies?
Gotta be. Well, if Martin Luther King is not an option.
So prophets who tell lies in the name of the Lord say, I had a dream.
Yeah. Is this during some kind of railroad speech where they're trying to say, this is what prophets of lies will say?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, that's what we're going to go with, Nikaris. Prophets who tell lies.
Okay.
Sluggards. It could be the sluggards, too, but I can go either way on that.
It's people of ill repute. Can we choose both?
No.
Okay.
No. Six, what did Gideon do when he heard the interpretation of the dream? He dressed himself in sackcloth and ashes. He hid in the wine press. He went to speak to the king of the Midianites. He worshipped and returned to the camp of Israel.
Help me out, boys. This is not my strong area.
That's the worship.
So, yeah, Gideon hears the interpretation of the dream. He dresses himself in sackcloth and ashes. He hid in the wine press. He went to speak to the king of the Midianites. He worshipped and returned to the camp of Israel. I think he worshipped and returned to the camp of Israel. All right, we're going to go with our first inclination unless someone feels strongly.
No.
Chase, yeah? He's in. All right, number seven. Who did Job say will fly away like a dream and not be found? His friends, the wicked, the righteous, his wife. Dear life from the path. Who did Job say will fly away like a dream and not be found? His friends, the wicked, the righteous, his wife.
The wicked. I don't know. I'm not strong on that. This is the second week in a row that I've dumped it.
You've biffed on a Job one. I think it's the wicked, though. The wicked will fly away like a dream and not be found.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, we're going to stick with that. Eight.
Yeah.
Let's see. When God would not answer King Saul, either by dreams, Urim, or prophets, where did he go to console the medium? Hebron, Gilgal, Endor, Aphek? And it's the witch of Endor.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely the witch of Endor. I remember that because that's where the Ewoks are from. Star Wars Ewoks are from Endor. Daniel also had insight into all visions and dreams. And what were the other skills that he and his three friends had? Knowledge and skill in every aspect of literature and wisdom. Prophecy and telling of the future. Pastoring and priesthood. They could run through troops and leap over walls. The Bible doesn't speak to the last one, but it's not off the table. Insight in all visions and dreams. Okay, in addition to that, knowledge and skill in every aspect of literature and wisdom, prophecy and telling of the future, pastoring and priesthood.
I mean, is it said outright in the Bible, or are we supposed to put a bunch of facts together and say which one of these things are true?
So, did any one of those guys prophesy?
It has to be the wisdom, knowledge and...
Yeah, knowledge and skill in every aspect of literature and wisdom.
Every aspect? I mean, that's a bold claim.
That is bold.
If they wouldn't have said every, I probably would have picked that already, but they've, I mean, who says I have knowledge and wisdom in every aspect of literature?
I think Donald Trump said that.
That's true. He did.
All right, we're gonna go with that one.
It's huge, like Ehud.
What was the name of the king for whom Daniel interpreted a dream before the king had seen a great image? Artaxerxes, Belshazzar, Hezekiah, or Nebuchadnezzar?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Daniel interpreted a dream where the king had seen a great image. You're with Nebuchadnezzar?
Yes.
Dan? Because he deals with Nebuchadnezzar's dreams when he has the tree, right? Is it always Nebuchadnezzar's dreams? Artaxerxes isn't. That's not the same time, though. Artaxerxes is the guy when...
He's Esther, isn't he?
Yeah, during Esther's time. Belshazzar would have been during that time. Hezekiah was the Israel king.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. The first thing you said.
All right, Nebuchadnezzar. All right, here we go. Oh, man, this one... I don't know about this one.
Come on.
Number one.
Okay.
Why did God say to Abimelech in a dream that he was about to die? We said because he had chosen Sarah to be his wife and she was married to Abraham. That is correct.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Question two. In the first dream that Joseph had, what did he see? We said sheaves of wheat. That is correct. Number three. What did the three branches represent in the dream that Joseph interpreted for the Pharaoh's cupbearer? We said days. That is correct. Mm-hmm. Number four, what did King Solomon ask God for when God appeared to him in a dream and told him to ask what he would? We said understanding. That is correct. Number five, who said, I had a dream? Nick Harris said, prophets who tell lies in the name of the Lord. That is correct.
Yeah.
Hold on. I don't remember. I'm going to check this out. We're gonna check out the...
This is like in the time of Baal. And they were all having... Or it could be Jeremiah.
Yes, Jeremiah 23. Yeah. I have heard what the prophets have said, who prophesy lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
All right on. Let's see. What did Gideon do when he heard the interpretation of the dream? We said he worshipped and returned to the camp of Israel. That is correct. Number seven, who did Job say will fly away like a dream and not be found? We said the wicked. That is correct.
Yeah.
Number eight, when God would not answer King Saul, either by dreams, Urim, or prophets, where did he go to consult a medium? We said Endor. That is correct. Daniel also had insight into all visions and dreams, and what were the other skills that he and his three friends had? We said knowledge and skill in every aspect of literature and wisdom. That is correct.
That's bold.
What was the name of the king for whom Daniel interpreted a dream where the king had seen a great image? We said Nebuchadnezzar. That is correct. That is 10 out of 10, boys.
Yeah.
We rocked it.
That's 100% on dreams.
What do normal people get?
The quiz had been taken 22,204 times since 2004, and the average score for the quiz was 62%.
Whoa.
Hey, man, we dominated that stuff.
Yeah, that was nice.
That is a surprise.
That means combined, the four of us can equal one man.
One
good man that can take a quiz.
Oh, man, that does mean that, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's too bad, really.
Yeah, that is a real bummer. All right, you've been listening to Live from the Path. We appreciate you hanging out with us so far this evening. You can stay around and listen, but it's going to be silent because we're done.
Yeah.
So thanks again for hanging out with us tonight. If you need to get a hold of the show, send us an email, info@livefromthepath.org, or you can hook up with us on Twitter at Live from the Path. Same thing on Facebook. Until then, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.